We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
This is In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots podcast. It's all Pelicans, all the time. And welcome to the podcast. The season from hell is over, and the New Orleans Pelicans, surprisingly, aren't in the playoffs. I'm shocked by this result. I didn't see it coming. Jake, are you shocked?
No, not at all with how this year went. I was looking at some of their stats today and everything, and my goodness, was this just absolutely horrible. And, you know, all of you Pelicans fans and Bourbon Street Shots readers, give yourself just a pat on the back for surviving this year, because I personally, and I love basketball and love this team, was so ready for this to be over.
Yeah. Yeah, so let me ask you this question. Which would you rather experience? Another season just like this one, or a giant flaming bag of poo on your doorstep?
You can at least put like a hose on the poo on your doorstep, and here there's no way to make it end. You've got to deal with all 82 games. You can call the fire department, and they take care of it. Like, there's ways to fix that and get it to stop. This just went on and on and on and on, and it was just like, okay, are we done yet? Are we done yet? Nope. Wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I went in and, you know, back like a couple months ago, there was some things I could look at and say, well, they're still doing this pretty well. And, they're doing this pretty well. And you can still go back and like the NBA.com stats tool and search back to those months. And I'll probably do this at some point and pull out some stuff that they actually did manage to do well before the team went in the complete crapper. But like, It was even statistically impacting Anthony Davis in a way that made my stomach hurt. Like, it was Davis, actually his numbers and his impact on off the court was down a little bit, but
they were
pretty
really
close.
Almost exactly the same as last year.
Right, up until about February.
Yeah.
And when I think it was when basically the news came out that Evans wasn't coming back, that Eric Gordon broke his finger again. At that point, suddenly, I think Anthony Davis just said, screw this. Because honestly, his performance from that point on, other than the amazing 59-point game, like defensively was shot. And I think he just basically kind of gave up on the season. And I don't, you know, in one case, one hand, I kind of like, it bothers me a little bit. But honestly, if I was in that situation, I don't know how hard I'd try either.
Yeah, I think that's completely fair. Like, this was just, what, a dumpster fire all around, and there's no other way to put it. You'd like him to be that leader that we all want him to be, but maybe he's just not that guy, and we kind of saw it, and it's good to know, and they need to get another one, potentially.
Yep. But you brought up leaders, and that's what this podcast is about.
It's like we planned this out or something ahead of time with our transitions.
No, I think they could tell we didn't plan that one out.
No, we did not. We did not.
So what this podcast is because obviously there are going to be some changes this offseason. What I want to get out ahead of and talk to you, everybody about and like just bounce some ideas off your head and think about what would happen or – When Mickey Loomis comes in and says, okay, what do I do with this team now? Like, he's got to make that decision. He's probably already made the decision, or he's going to make that decision and communicate it very shortly. Basically, he's going to decide whether this front office stays, they get a chance to salvage this wreckage, or he's going to come in and bring in a whole new crew. And when I say front office, I want to make this clear. On this podcast, we're not talking coach. I feel that Gentry is safe. You think Gentry is safe?
Very, very much so.
Okay. And it probably be, I mean, if I was hiring a new GM and brought them in, I would not want to be shaking the boat that much either. I would let the GM settle in, figure out if Gentry's going to work. You know, maybe if he's not working, get rid of him shortly into the season and bring in your own person, or play through the season and then replace him. Or maybe Gentry will work out and we'll see that offense we are all hoping for. But I'd be pretty shocked if they just did a clean sweep and came in with a new GM and a new coach at the same time. So we're not going to talk coach. We're going to talk basically Dell Dumps GM. So first off, if you were a betting man,
and I am,
what odds would you give Dell Demps of retaining his job?
I'm going to go pretty high, and I'm going to say 90%. I think there's a chance that he might lose it, but from what I've been hearing and things like that, and just the feeling I get from the organization, I think he's going to be safe, and he's not going anywhere. And also, the way I look at it, and we'll probably touch on this, is look, this team is – there's no one way to build a team. You know, certain – there's the Oklahoma City model. There was the model they tried to do in Philly. There's the model they're doing here. There's not one right way. And for better or worse, and it does seem like worse, the Pelicans have gone down this path with Dell Demps, and the asset chest is so bare that another GM with a different method of building a championship team isn't really going to be able to do a whole lot right now. So – they're already so far down this road, I also just don't see them deviating from it because there's no other road to take.
Wow, that's bleak.
Yeah, I mean...
I don't know. So, like, people have been pretty bleak. I don't know if I'm still settled. I've always been a middle-of-the-road kind of person. So I don't know if it's as bleak. We still have Anthony Davis. Like,
no, I'm not saying that you can't turn it around necessarily. Just you've got to do it the way you've already been doing it with this GM.
Okay, and so you're pretty certain he's going to stick around, and you know basically from what I've heard too, I don't know if it's very likely that everybody we should be expecting to see a new general manager for this team. I can hear the howls of protest right now. So before we continue further, that's what we think is going to happen. If you were Mickey Loomis and you were looking at this team, do you put the fate of this team into Dell Demps' hands for one more offseason, or do you start looking in another direction?
No, personally, I'd probably make a change. I would just do it and, you know, let the new GM that you hire know that you've got, like, a lot of job security here because we understand you're not going to be able to turn this around right away. And I think that's the method I would go. I think just it's time. It hasn't worked. You got to pull the plug at some point before you get deeper and potentially – you know, do some more damage. The issue here is Dell Demps going to do anything with the long-term, you know, health of the franchise in his mind? And if he's worried about his job security, no, he's just going to try and do short-term fixes that get him into the playoffs next season. And that might hurt the team long-term. And if that's not what you're trying to do, yeah, you've got to let him go.
Right. Yeah, so McNamara says that when he thinks about this team and building it forward, he's thinking 2019. Del Demps any chance 2019 enters his mind in any move he's making this offseason other than a, hey, it might be cool if this still was working in 2019?
No, probably not.
So, in some respects, that is that's the kind of almost a kick in the gut kind of thing for me, and let me explain why. What it feels like is the 2005-2006 New Orleans Hornets. That was a team that had Chris Paul. They had David West, who's suddenly playing pretty well, and they basically said, all right, we got to go all in on veteran players and get into the playoffs. And basically they went out and got – they overpaid monstrously for Peja Stojakovic. They traded some guys for Tyson Chandler, which granted was a great move. They overpaid Morris Peterson. Then they overpaid James Posey the next year. Like, this was a team that was just like, we're in the playoffs, completely disregarding the fact that Chris Paul at the time was 23 and 24 years old, and they were bringing in 30-year-olds to run with him. So I will be on one hand, Del Demps has said over and over again, we're going young veterans, and I'm hoping he's going to continue going young veterans if that's the plan he's going to take. But if we start bringing in a whole bunch of 30-year-old players to try to just get the playoffs, I might break down. I might cry on the podcast.
That sounds sad. We don't want to make you cry. So, Del Demps, if you're listening, please don't do that. Ryan's, you know, emotional state is very fragile, and you don't want to set him over the edge.
Yeah, that's so bad.
But no, you're right. They're going to try and make the playoffs next year. I can almost guarantee you that's probably what they're thinking, and they're trying to find a way to do it. And okay. Is that the right thing? Maybe. I think they probably would have made the playoffs this year if they had just a moderate amount of, like, regular injury stuff. But they didn't, and you got to find another way. But this team, looking at it, yeah, you'll make the playoffs, but you're never going to win a title.
Right.
So that's why – do something else. Try something different.
Yep. And now, in some respects also, this particular draft pick that's coming up right now, a lot of people feel like this is really the last chance in some respects. Like, they feel that this team is not going to have the wonderful opportunity of having all these injuries, which is just a bizarre way of saying it, again. Like, they're not – like, they shouldn't be in this situation where they're this awful again. So this draft pick, if you had to read Del Demps' mind, and regardless of whether they move up, they stay where they are, they drop a spot or two because of people jumping over them, what are the odds you would give that Del Demps would hold on to that draft pick?
You know, I don't know. I think he's under a lot of pressure to actually draft a player versus trading it. And, you know, it was...
Really? Like, do you think the ownership is saying, you know, get a young running mate with him, or...?
Yeah, no, I don't think it's ownership. I just think the way that, you know, he... If you want to look at it, he lost the Jrue Holiday trade, he lost the Omer Asik trade, and I don't think he wants to lose a potential other trade that involves a draft pick.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to weigh on him.
Okay. I will say this about the Omer Asik trade. He didn't lose a trade. He lost a signing.
That's fair.
That's how I would call it. But I don't know. Maybe I guess a lot of people probably would actually disagree with me that the 18th pick of the draft was too much ever to pay for Omer Asik. And maybe they're right at this point. But anyways, you think Del Demps will probably draft a player?
Yeah, I think so, unless they just get an offer they can't refuse. But I can't imagine – I've been trying to look at it and see who it would be, and I've just got no idea on, like, who they would trade that pick for. And I guess it also is going to depend on where it falls in the lottery.
Yeah. Yeah, so we're actually going to have another podcast coming up. Probably will be with Nick, for all of you people who are listening, where we talk about what are some trades that we could possibly see happening, like what players could we see being drafted with a really high pick, and maybe if we trade it, who could they go after? So we're not going to spend a lot of time here talking about like who they could gun for. I have a couple teams in the back of my mind as they're a little chaotic, and maybe you could go in and help them push the reset button if you had the right asset. But let's instead shift and let's just talk let's say Del Demps, we know he's being let go. And Mickey Loomis walks up to your house, knocks on the door, you open up, and he says, "Who should we hire?" This is the weirdest thing in the world. He's at your house. He's like, "I'm completely clueless about basketball. I don't even know what a basketball looks like. I thought all balls were oblong. So who should we hire as a GM candidate?" He says, "I've heard about the Sam Hinkie guy. Is he a good option for us?" So if you heard that, would you slam the door in his face and run screaming and hide in the covers? Like, what is your take on Sam Hinkie as an option for the New Orleans Pelicans?
See, Hinkie, I think, is the most interesting one because personally, I'm not a huge Hinkie guy, and I know a lot of people are. Did you listen to him on the Zach Lowe podcast?
I did.
So the way I thought of that was just quit with the NBA speak and, yeah, like, say something real, and it was just too much, and that just kind of soured me on the guy a little bit.
I think his entire world was defensive at that point.
Yeah.
And I don't think he was capable of doing anything but retreating into rote speech at that point.
It was
kind of uncomfortable.
Right? Like,
yeah.
It just sounds like someone who's throwing out just buzzwords to try and get you to believe they know what they're doing or something like that. And and then you can just see through it whenever that's the case. So I'm not huge on him. I fully understand his strategy and what he was trying to do. I fully understand every move he made and why he made it, but if you're going to try and build through the draft, you need to actually be good at drafting.
Yeah.
You know, just like Del Demps realizes maybe he's not good at drafting, so he needs to trade these draft picks for his method of team building. I understand it. It just hasn't worked out either. I could defend the why behind it. I can't defend the end result. Same thing with Hinkie. I do believe, you know, one of the biggest things people have said about him is that he's won almost every trade that he's made. He hasn't made any, like, seriously significant trades to me enough, other than maybe the Drew Holiday one, to justify that. It's not like he's just completely ripping people off. He's just getting an extra second-round pick that ultimately he just keeps spinning and spinning and spinning, and nothing's coming from what he's doing. It's just a wheel that's always in motion, and you're not going anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there are some moves in there that I like, but you are correct in that every single one of those trades that he made was just resetting the clock and getting more potential. Like, he just increased the potential. He increased the ceiling, possibly, of his team. But at no point did he ever make any trade that raised the floor of his team at all. In fact, every trade he made generally tended to drop the floor of his team.
Right. And so I'm not sure if he's actually capable of doing these other moves that make the team better right now.
Right.
And
yeah.
Until I see him do that, that's why. Now, am I going to slam the door in Loomis's face and just be like, "Get out of here"?
Yeah.
No, I'm not. You could talk me into this. I wouldn't hate it, but I'm not excited about it.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, what fascinates me about this is ostensibly the reason why Hinkie did everything was to go and get one major star for his team, hopefully more than one major star for his team. He wanted to get as many stars as possible. My whole question, though, with him is I'd be willing to bet that if he came in and he made a presentation to the decision makers for the New Orleans Pelicans and said, "This is what I think we should do," I'm willing to bet he would still want to be bottoming out with this team. I fully believe that while step one would have been completed, draft a star, he's not going to think that I'm done, that now I should start just getting better. He's going to think, now I need the second guy. And maybe he'll think that the sixth pick or whatever this ends up being is going to get him a chance. I really think he'll still come in and say, "I'm going to want to trade every player on this team except for Anthony Davis." And that, by the way, is probably the worst Sam Hinkie impression you'll ever hear. And I just want to be bad for another couple years to make sure we get draft picks so that in 2 years, Anthony Davis will have some really good running mates.
Are you doing a Nixon impression?
That's not a little
sounded like.
My fellow Americans. So anyway, I really think that's the case. Now, I would find it fascinating, and I do like the way he's made. He seems to be his number one asset is he drives a really hard bargain. I will say that. And I don't know if I would ever say that about Demps, but like when they traded for Drew Holiday, getting two first-round picks, it just felt like it was too much. And, like, when you hear about the trade he made with Sacramento to, like, clear space for them so they could go out and get Bellinelli and Kostakoufis, of all people, he drove a really hard bargain. And you look at all of these different deals, and he gets, like, real assets for players that aren't going to really do much. So I would like to have a GM I know who's going to squeeze the orange as much as possible. So in that respect, he's interesting. But teaming him up with Alvin Gentry, who is quite possibly the most personable, friendly person on the planet in the history of the world, might blunt his robot, I am a machine kind of personality. But you're right. There's still a lot to worry about there.
I mean, the other is trade. A lot of the trades he can make, like that, especially that one with the Kings, which was like just the weirdest thing looking at, was like, you know, you mentioned he's using his cap space as that asset. This team doesn't quite have as much cap space as the Sixers did.
That's true.
You're taking away his, like, what he uses all the time, and you're almost, it seems like he'd be just GMing with one hand behind his back, which just means he can't put two phones to his head like Dumars does and only one.
We'll get to Dumars. Don't try to jump to Dumars already.
Put that one at the end of the list.
Okay. He'll be there. We'll talk about him, though. All right, so he says, Sam Hinkie, he says he sees the look on your face and says, ah, just kidding. I didn't mean Sam Hinkie. But I did hear a rumor that Houston was such a mess this year, and they, you know, have such a problem there with Harden and Howard, and the fact they tried to trade away Montezunas and then he came back and all this stuff. And Daryl Morey is maybe available. Like, I could see him possibly being released, or, you know, we could even trade like maybe a second round pick and get him ourselves, something like that. What do you think of Daryl Morey? How quickly would you say yes to Daryl Morey, or would you not say yes to Daryl Morey?
I would throw that door open so quickly. I'd invite him in for a glass of nice whiskey or bourbon or scotch or whatever he wants, and I would just be like, Loomis, I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship, and I would be ecstatic.
Yeah.
I would be on that train so fast.
So why, like, because Hinkie is, I mean, he worked with Daryl Morey. Hinkie is a Daryl Morey disciple. What is it about Daryl Morey that makes you excited that Hinkie just, what itch does Morey scratch that Hinkie can't?
I mean, he just has gone out and made that team better. They were a bit of a disaster this year for, a lot of reasons. But looking at it, you know, so he's got a mix of both, like, things that improve the team and give them more potential long term as well. He knows when to cut bait on a guy and get something of value for him, like Omer Asik. And he, sorry, Pelicans fan. Sorry, Del Demps. And, you know, he's kept these first-round picks. He's brought in good players. He makes smart free agent signings for the most part.
Yeah.
So, overall, I'm looking at his record right now since he's been there. He was there in 2007. And, like, he clearly has been able to do stuff. And also, it looks like, which I had no idea, he freaking drafted Nick Batum. Did you know that?
Yeah.
I was not even aware of that. That looks brilliant now, even if the dude's not on the team.
Yeah. He and Kevin Pritchard had like a little dueling war where both of them were moving around in the draft to try to grab him. It was kind of funny.
Like, so he clearly knows kind of what he's doing, and he's a competent GM. You know, win you a title? Maybe not, but if this team had the success that Houston's had over the past couple of years, I'd be thrilled.
Yeah. And here's the thing, too. Like, and here's where his track record would be particularly attractive to the Pelicans management. Morey had, he basically had the Tracy McGrady, Yao Ming combination rolling, and they did pretty well. And then both those guys got hurt, he basically had to move on from them. But when he moved on from them, he didn't suck. He got players who kept that team competitive that were really good. He basically cobbled together a bunch of mid-tier guys. And to be honest, if you put a bunch of mid-tier guys, if you didn't just cobble those guys together around Anthony Davis, you're a guaranteed playoff team every year. And then you can use all those assets you've cobbled around to go out and get the next star, which is what he'll be trying to do the whole time. So, like, he has actually proven he knows how to get those mid-tier guys who will be impactful and won't cost too much money that you'll be crippled going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it makes just a ton of sense, and it tends to work out. And, yeah, it seems like he could step in and actually do something here, which would be nice, because that's not what I think most GMs would be able to do.
Yeah. So I think that Daryl Morey becoming an available asset was much more likely if they missed the playoffs entirely, which is, again, it's a really weird fine line to draw. Playoffs or not, you're fired. And they made the playoffs. Do you think this is just like, you know, sound with no real, like smoke with no fire? Like, is there a chance Morey hits the market? Like, can you see a reason to get rid of him?
No,
that's
none.
The weird part,
like,
about Houston.
None. I think there were some coaching issues there. You know, maybe this hasn't worked out exactly like they hoped, but they still had a lot of success.
Yeah.
You know, you can't be upset with his tenure and what he's done. Have they won the title? No. If you look at it just in that, it's a disappointment. But overall, like, man, I would kill to have the success that they've had.
Yeah.
And, like, the players that they have and everything.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. So we're going to move on from Daryl Morey. And then I have two names for you. You get to pick which one we'll talk about first, because I'm generous and kind and wonderful. There are two candidates out there who are big names, and people wanted us to hire them last offseason. I actually kind of wanted one of them to come in last offseason. But from everything I understand, from the information I've gathered, both of these guys require full control if they come in. So that essentially means that if they bring them in, they are going to be in charge of everything. They're probably going to want to be coach and probably will have a puppet GM. They want to have a Stan Van Gundy kind of situation, where basically they're in charge of, they're the primary voice. And we all know that's difficult. Those two guys are Jeff Van Gundy and Tom Thibodeau. So which of those two guys do you want to talk about first?
I'd say let's do Thibodeau first.
That's Thibodeau.
The less interesting one to me.
Less interesting. Really? So you would be more excited to bring Jeff Van Gundy in than Tom Thibodeau?
Yeah.
Okay. So Tom Thibodeau, I don't know. Like, I've seen some pretty funny memes after the Chicago Bulls completely failed to make the playoffs this year. And it's strange for me to feel gleeful about another team not making the playoffs after I watched this team. So I should stop sounding gleeful and sound mournful. But the memes are pretty funny. They were funny. So, Thibodeau, you know, the memes were pretty funny about Thibodeau grinning and stuff like that when they didn't make it. So he can clearly coach. There's no question this guy can coach. And the relationship he had with, albeit a very hard to get along with front office in Chicago.
That is a mild way to put it.
Yeah, the number of stories I've now heard about how combative the front office of Chicago is pretty crazy. So that would probably leave a bad taste in your mouth if you're Thibodeau. I've heard he wants full control. He wants to be in charge of everything. Do you think that Thibodeau would be able to do both roles successfully if we brought him in?
See, I don't know. That's the thing. He hasn't been a GM before, and it's going to be an unknown situation, and it could work out. He would certainly get guys that he wants and that fits his system and his style of play, and he wouldn't, you know, he'd get guys that can play all 48 minutes for every game over the year. But, I don't know if he's going to be a good GM. Sometimes it doesn't work out. Look at some of the GMs in the league right now, like Vladdy in Sacramento and stuff, and that is, like, your worst-case scenario. Even if you hate Dell Demps and don't like what he's done, it actually can get worse. It's like readily out there that it can get worse. And I'm terrified of making that move because, you know what, if it gets worse, Anthony Davis will be so gone in a couple of years. Not right away, but towards the end of this contract, he's not coming back.
Right.
So I don't want to bring in a coach, GM, that has never done it before. I need to see a track record.
Yeah. And here's the other thing I will say. Like, I kind of agree with you on Thibodeau. He was actually the coach I wanted to see brought in because, again, and I'll say this for the 1 millionth time, this team is terrible at defense. They were terrible last year. They're terrible the year before. They're terrible every year Monty was here except for the very first. This team actually cobbled together an offense that fluctuated between like 7 and 13 until the beginning of March. They had an above-average offense with Anthony Davis, Ryan Anderson, and the guard of the day. Just with those guys, they had an above-average offense. Get a defensive coach in, get some defensive personnel in, and this team will be pretty good. So that's why I wanted Thibodeau.
But they have a defensive coach in Ehrman. He's known for that.
He is known for that.
That's the thing. Is it the coach, or is it just maybe the team's really bad?
There are some pretty bad defenders on this team, and you know I expect to see a lot of them go. But I still feel like if you're talking just impact wise, what can a coach impact the most? It's still defense. I don't think that they can impact offense. Like, you're not going to teach a guy all the handles necessary to be able to, you know, get open if he doesn't know it already at this point, or at least be 95% of the way there. And maybe you can improve a guy's stroke a little bit, or a lot if you're the Spurs shooting staff. But defensively, you can put in a system that fits your personnel properly that can make a huge difference. So that's why I wanted Thibodeau as coach. But he terrifies me as a GM.
Yeah, terrifies me.
And my number one reason is, and you alluded to it, he plays the crap out of his best players.
Oh yeah, that's the big knock on him. 3-hour practices, grinds them down. It worries mm-hmm. me.
Yeah, and what it also tells me is, the Bulls have had young players on that team available. Can you think of any under Thibodeau, except for Jimmy Butler, who developed and became, like, were fed minutes and became amazing?
No, not particularly.
And the thing is, I don't think he thinks of it that way. I think he walks into a game and he says, I'm going to win this game. And he doesn't care about the game 2 months from now. He's going to win this game. And if you're going to tell me that guy is my GM, I'm going to make a mess in my pants. Like, that is terrifying. That is the absolute opposite of what I want as a GM. I want my GM to think, it'd be nice if I won the game today, but I want to be winning lots of games 2 months from now.
Yes, that's what you would hope your GM, you know, is trying to do.
Right. So that's why, you know, the idea of Thibodeau coming in and under full control is really abhorrent to me. But now I'm interested, because your number one reason to object to Thibodeau is that he hasn't been in a front office before, so we don't know. Jeff Van Gundy hasn't been in a front office really either, so why are you more comfortable with Jeff Van Gundy, who, by the way, Thibodeau comes from his coaching tree?
He does. So it's not so much the coaching, it's more I actually have more faith in him as a GM. I'm not, like, I don't think this dude is the be-all, end-all savior that some people do. And, like, he's not coming in and he doesn't have a magic wand that he can wave and everything's going to be fixed. And he's been out of coaching for so long, who knows if it would work. And also, he's probably too expensive for the team, but we're throwing that out and we're just pretending. I think it helps being in the spot that he's been in, where you've been around the league so long and around every single team, talking to the GMs, the coaches, the players, seeing what works, seeing what doesn't, and kind of having that outsider perspective on it and being like, all right, I've called games for every team in the league. I've talked with them in depth. I know what works here. I know what works at, you know, in Oakland, in Chicago, in Memphis, and I know what doesn't work in these places, and I'm going to try and do the stuff that works and see it firsthand. I that's why I just have more faith in him. He's not solely just been on the bench coaching the players that he's given. He's able to watch the league in a different sense than someone like Thibodeau does.
Right. I will say Thibodeau does have the advantage of being with the Team USA program, so he does see a little bit more. But you're right. Like, Jeff Van Gundy moves around to a lot of different teams. I will also say, and this is just me being a sucker, like, Jeff Van Gundy is one of the – when he talks about basketball and talks about what he feels about teams, other than the fact that he thinks every coach is the most fantastic coach ever on the planet, he never says a bad word about any coach ever. He comes across as a really intelligent, really thoughtful person. So that is an attractive quality. I would love to have, I mean, can you imagine being able to sit down and talk with Jeff Van Gundy as a GM of your team? For like, that would be an amazing experience.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's a smart guy. You know, it's not guaranteed that it'll be perfect, but I think it would go over really well, and I think he would do some good. Yeah. He's just waiting for it seems like it's almost an inevitability till he comes back in, and it just is going to depend on when he does. He's waiting for the right situation.
Yeah. So if he said Jeff Van Gundy or Tom Thibodeau, obviously, if you were involved in this, you would do interviews with a bunch of people and get that kind of. But if he just told you right now, you have all the options of GM candidates out there available to me. Are Tom Thibodeau and Jeff Van Gundy, because they want this full control, even in your top five?
I'd say Van Gundy would be close to the top five if he's not in it. Thibodeau, no.
Okay. All right. And I wouldn't even have them in my top five. Like, because I don't want a GM who wants to be the coach too. I don't want that. I want a GM who's going to focus on being a GM. I want a guy who's going to focus, like, cause GMs have to do a lot more than just look. Like, everybody thinks of GMs as these are the guys who just look at players and assess their abilities, and then they draft them and they put the team together, and they have to do a billion other things as well. They have to, a lot of them have strong oversight over the operations of the team and have to do a lot of stuff that has nothing to do with the personnel of a team. So I want a guy who can focus on all that stuff and not have to worry about the day-to-day coaching of his squad as well. It's just too much. So neither of those guys would even be on my list. So let me ask you about GM retreads.
I wonder, can our listeners just guess who we might be talking about here?
Yeah, I'm sure some names immediately pop in their head. Every single time, there's the whiff of the word GM floating around in New Orleans. GM. Joe Dumars appears, out, like, poof, he's there on the front page. Joe Dumars. It's really magic how he does that. So Joe Dumars, and there is this recent rumor. I don't know. Do I even want to give it rumor?
No, it's a report, and say it's necessarily an accurate report. Let's, you know, to put it maybe kindly. I don't know the guy who wrote it. I don't know his sources. Let's just call it out. It came out of Milwaukee, Racine or whatever it is. This is how little I care about it. That I don't even know. So a guy who covers the Bucks said that John Hammond and Dumars were coming to the team as kind of a pair. Dumars is a president and John Hammond as the, you know, general manager. And they're going to work together in tandem, I guess. And first off, this makes so little sense on so many levels. One, I was told, and who knows how accurate it is, that the guy who put out the report doesn't actually really have ties into the organization anymore. Under the old regime, he did, but under the new owners and everything there, he doesn't really have as much information. And that could be true, that could not be true. It's just what I was told, simple as that.
Yeah.
I'm still of the belief that also I gave Dell Demps a 90% to keep his job. So again, I'm not putting much stock into this. Here's the other thing. If you bring in Dumars, he's going to fire Gentry. He's already fired Gentry once. You can't imagine he wouldn't be like, oh, I know I fired you once before. Let's keep you around this time. You think Gentry's going to really be happy about this? Like,
no.
So you already have Dumars who doesn't like – let's say doesn't like Gentry. Again, we don't know for sure if this is the case. But Hammond and Gentry actually work together and supposedly like each other. So you're going to bring in a president who hates the coach and a GM that likes the coach?
Yeah.
It sounds like a sitcom.
Let's
put everyone into a house
ridiculous.
Together and let like the shenanigans occur. It's like Three's Company or something.
Yeah, this is also something I want to put out there too. Like John Hammond, Milwaukee disappointed this year, and I don't think you could have a more dangerous situation than to have Jason Kidd be your head coach. That guy. Even when he was in the league, he was known as a coach killer. He drove coaches out of multiple places. He's always gunning for the spot of, he wants to be in control. So if you think he's going to come in and be your coach, even the reports when he tried to come into the Milwaukee Bucks, they were saying he was looking for full control. Like, he'd been a head coach for not even like 1 year for Brooklyn, and already he thought he should be in charge of everything. And so Hammond is a GM for a team that doesn't have points with a backstabbing head coach underneath of him who knows the owner and got the job because the owner told the GM to hire him. That's a guy who is probably sitting there thinking, I'm in a really crappy situation. I need to get my name out there as a potential. And would it even shock you if he called up this dude who he used to talk to and said, hey, you know, it's possible I'll be out, but, you know, maybe I'll end up in a place like New Orleans? Because he's going to look at teams that probably have a, or could potentially have a opening at GM and throw names out there. He's going to do that because, that's how these guys, like, they call, you know, Woj or whoever they can, any resources they have to get their name back out there so that they can, you know, at least be in the public awareness as this guy's a potential. It wouldn't shock me at all if that was the actual story of where this John Hammond thing came from.
No, not at all. Like, I was on the radio all week trying to, like, put out fires, and I'm like, why am I even doing this? This is so dumb. And, oh, God, it was awful. I was so ready for that to be over. And, like, no, it's not happening. Look, Dumars has been rumored for how long? It goes back to before last season, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. No, it's been years.
If you were going to do it already.
Yeah.
You know, when you see, like, movie where you got – I was recently – I've been watching Daredevil now, and someone's captured, and they've got, like, a gun to his head. He's just, like, kill me already, and they're screaming at the dude. And, like, they never kill him right away. That's, like, what this damn Dumars thing is.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I don't even understand what the attraction is. I understand that Dumars comes from Louisiana, and I understand he's trying to keep his name out there as a potential GM because he wants a job. But like, he is the absolute, you know, perfect example of a GM who has all of his history weighted on the wrong side of the scale. Like, I don't see any way you could look at what he did on the tenure as the in charge of the Detroit Pistons, and other than the Rasheed Wallace trade, think that he did a great job.
I mean, you know, he's done some good stuff there, but you've also got to look at the tail end of his career, which was really bad, like really bad right there, and that's a huge concern.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you got to look at it this way. He drafted Darko Milicic, which, you know, everybody was going to do that. Like, that's first off, you know. But he drafted Darko Milicic. Then he let Mehmet Okur go. And Okur, I don't know if people remember this, Okur was the backup center of that team that won the finals. And he went on and became probably, you know, a top 10 center in the league for a bunch of years. And they had the opportunity to keep him. And then when they finally realized that the thing wasn't working, they ended up trading Chauncey Billups for Allen Iverson to clear space, and then spent all of that space on Villanueva and Ben Gordon. Wow.
Yep.
Like, that's the guy I want to be in charge of this much cap space?
No, not at all, right?
Oh, boy, that would be really terrifying.
It'd be scary.
Yeah. So let's just talk. I'm going to throw a few other retreads at you. Just names that have kind of stuck in my head. I was pretty happy when the Colangelos went off the board and went
yeah, that was thrilling.
Went to Philly because Brian, I know, is out there. So what I mentioned him a little bit earlier, Kevin Pritchard. He was the GM of the Portland Trailblazers, who basically drafted Greg Oden, but he did do the Brandon Roy and LaMarcus Aldridge trades. He went after Batum very aggressively. What do you think? Like, he is out there. He's been actually looking to get into be a GM somewhere again. He keeps being assistant GMs at this place and this place and this place. Kevin Pritchard, any interest there?
A little bit. I wouldn't hate that. Thinking about his tenure there, they were like, again, I'm not necessarily looking for a guy who's going to deliver a title. Like, it's just so hard to do that in the NBA. Can we just get some sustained success for a little while? Like, let's make the playoffs 4 years in a row. That would be a lot of fun. And so I wouldn't hate that at all, actually. I wouldn't be super excited. I'd rather get someone else, but I could deal.
Okay. Another name that's rolling around out there, and this one I think is pretty funny. I actually read an article that he wants to do this now. How quick would you slam the door in Loomis's face if he said, George Carl?
So quickly. So there's not a chance. You remember when everyone thought he should come in to replace Monty and be the savior of the team?
Yeah.
You remember that? Hindsight's, hindsight's fun.
Yep. And then here's one thing. And I don't even know who it is anymore, because that team that has been, you know, pirated by every club in the league. would it, since I don't even know the name of the person at this point anymore, would it surprise you even a little bit if you found out that Del Demps was replaced by the assistant GM of the San Antonio Spurs?
I don't even know who it is.
Right.
No, would not be shocked.
Like, because it just seems like that's what like when teams are like, well, who should we go to? Well, San Antonio Spurs have been good forever. They have had their number two guy stolen by like eight different teams.
Yeah,
like Sean Marks was the current number two, and he went off to Brooklyn. Del Demps was technically number three. He came to the Pelicans, he wasn't even the assistant GM. He was the GM of their D League team with player personnel responsibilities. So it wouldn't shock me at all, but I would be kind of terrified if that happened, because whoever's in second in San Antonio, he can't have been there for more than a few months.
So you're just hiring the third guy again, essentially, is what you're doing. So we're just doing this all over again.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you have any retreads that you think that, hey, that guy did a pretty good job? Like Billy King? You want to get Billy King from the Brooklyn?
No, I'm good.
You sure?
I'm going to slam that door pretty quickly. I'm trying to think of who else I'd really like in terms of retreads. There's not many. There's a reason they're retreads, and it's I'm like glad the league's finally getting away from just hiring the same people over and over again. Except when the Kings are going to probably hire Vinny Del Negro to be their coach and just continue that cycle at infinity or whatever it is. And no, I'm good. I think I like the list we've made. Unfortunately, they're not going to make a change.
Yeah. Does that depress you?
A bit. Not as much as it probably should. It also hasn't hit me yet. Maybe I'm still in, like, shock and denial on the season. I'm, like, still in the bargaining stage.
Oh, my bargaining stage went away back in March.
That's when you started doing it?
That was when I was, like, I knew that I had gotten to acceptance when I went and brought up Draft Express and took a look at it.
Just that day you typed in draftexpress.com and you're like, oh, okay. Well, all these steps are clear now.
Yes. I was like, it was right around like March 2nd or 3rd. I kind of tried to avoid all of the, you know, getting excited about a lottery pick. And I was like, I was like March 2nd. I was like, this is stupid. Like, I've known this team was going nowhere for a month and a half. Why am I just, like, trying to cling on to any sort of, you know, that's the day I went in, typed draftexpress.com, and I started reading about all the wonderful prospects that we have a chance at in this draft, which is fun. I'll at least say that, like, the NBA is clever enough that even, like the teams that are, you know, really bad, at least at the end of the season, they have something to get excited about.
Yeah, until they change, like, the draft order and stuff and put in new things, and then no one's going to be excited for anything.
I don't actually believe that's going to happen. Like, I 100%, you know, agree in a vacuum with the idea that you should make it impossible to tank. Like, that tanking is a bad thing, and that any team that purposely loses, lots and lots of games shouldn't necessarily be awarded for that. But like my fixes wouldn't be make it so that, you know, there's a set order, because the teams that are down at the bottom, the only way they're typically going to get out of there is getting a couple good prospects in a couple drafts in a row. Really, that's the only way it's going to happen. Because what free agent in their right mind is going to go to that team? And trades, you know, you can make trades, but the best players aren't available in trade very often. And if you're one of the bottom teams, you're not going to have the assets to get them anyways. So, like, all of my plans have always been more along the lines of, if you tank, like, if you are one of the bottom two teams, like, if you've aggressively tanked, sorry, you're not in the running for the top four picks.
That's fair. I don't hate that.
So that, basically, if you suck that bad, which means you have to at least try a little bit to win a little bit, you'll have races to keep out of those bottom two spots. Like, people will be active, they'll be trying to improve their team at some point in the season, so they're not in the bottom two. So basically, that they're out, like, they won't be out of the top four. They'll be fifth or sixth if they're the bottom two teams. And, you know, at least they'll try to make their team a little bit better, and they won't be aggressively tanking.
Yeah, that makes
Although,
sense.
Although, that's not going to stop a team in March that's, like, safely not going to be bottom two
from
pulling players.
Yeah.
Right. But you still have the lottery. Like, there's always going to be some sort of drawback, but at least you won't have – you'll never have a Philly situation where they're just like, yeah, we don't need an NBA-level guard. We can just punt on that.
Yeah, that makes sense. I don't hate this. I'm on board.
Anyways, so GM-wise, you don't think there's going to be a trade. What you've been hearing is that, or not trade, a replacement of Dell.
No, it's feeling and things like that. It just, like I said earlier, it's kind of depressing. But they're just so far gone down this road. Like, what good does it? Like, one, would a GM want this job? Yes, they would, because there's only 30 of them. But at the same point, you know, it still just doesn't seem like a new person's going to come in and do a whole lot. And
yeah.
You know, another thing is, if they were going to fire him, why not have done it after the trade deadline when he can't make any other moves?
Yeah.
And, like, get...
Well, I can see letting him stay till the end of the season, but if they're going to fire him, I fully expect it's going to happen by the weekend. Like, he's not going to be here next week if he's going
to
be fired.
No, you would have to do it very soon. Supposedly, you know, there was Alvin Gentry's, which I was at today, end-of-season press conference, and supposedly Dell Demps is going to meet with the media next week, is what we were told.
Yeah.
Who knows if that'll actually be the case, but that's what was said.
So, actually, and I just realized on my little list here, there was one thing that I forgot to bring up with you. So before we pull this, come to an end. So I don't know all of the assistant GMs in the league. I don't know any of the assistant to the assistant GMs in the league. I don't know head scouts in this league. Like, those people are generally kind of anonymous in most respects because the GMs want to be the face of their franchise. I already said don't go to the Spurs and get their number two guy or their number three guy because that cupboard is bare. It's been picked clean for years. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But if Mickey Loomis said, what team's number two guy?
Oh, I've got one.
Because I tried to do this. And I had a surprisingly hard time.
I've got
with
one that kind of jumps out to me, actually.
Okay. So, what team's number two guy would you target?
Boston's, the Celtics.
Okay.
I think
Danny Ainge's assistant.
Yeah. They've honestly, I really like that team they have there. They've done it through a lot of like smart moves. They have just assets on assets.
Mm-hmm.
They've done, and they're making the playoffs, and they have so much room to grow. They conceivably have enough stuff to trade for a superstar. They wanted Boogie Cousins. They could trade for him easily.
Right.
Anchor that team. And while still being in the playoffs, that's not easy to do.
Yeah. Yeah, and like I was trying to look through the different teams and figure it out. And like but Boston's a really good choice. I'm kind of on board with that. But when you like take a look at the other teams at the top, like Golden State Warriors, like why is that not our first choice? Why are we not like whoever's Bob Myers' assistant? We should be going after that dude. Like I didn't even think about Golden State Warriors, and it's probably because I feel like Bob Myers didn't necessarily build that team in some respects. Like he was there when they brought in Andre Iguodala and made the fringe moves that made them awesome. The core was kind of there already, I thought. So I don't know, like, maybe I'm wrong about that, but Like Golden State Warriors number two guy never even entered my mind. So am I crazy when I say that?
No, I don't think so. I'm kind of with you on that. That makes sense.
And then here's like the other part, and I think this is really funny. Like the Oklahoma City Thunder. So you go Golden State. We've already dismissed the Spurs. We're going by record. Cleveland Cavaliers. Can you really go for a guy with the Cavaliers with LeBron pulling
no,
all the strings
not at
there?
All.
Right. So already that team's out. The next best record is Toronto Raptors. Masai Ujiri's pretty new there. He didn't build that team either. He just moved around the edges. Maybe.
Yeah, but it's not like a sexy pick. It just seems like, you're going to end up with the same thing.
Right. Then next team is Oklahoma City Thunder. And do we like how they've moved around the edges on this team?
No, not particularly. They've done some
right.
things well, like, but I'm higher on Cantor than most other people are. So, like, I don't hate the moves they made, but, like, they partially, you know, again, lucked into a lot of it.
Yeah. And the trades that they've, like, they have spent all of their draft picks for Cantor and Waiters now at this
yes.
point. That doesn't sell me that front office.
No, not at all.
Other things do.
Certain
right.
things do,
and
but
then,
not a lot of the moves they've made to try and get them over the hump.
Yep. And if you keep going down, the Los Angeles Clippers, you know, Doc Rivers, I don't know. Like
we get to bring off back then.
Right. And then the next teams are like Miami Heat, which you're not getting Pat Riley, and who else is there? Like, I don't even know who is, because he's like such a towering
figure.
Yeah, he's
just like the dude. He's just the man there. I mean,
right.
You'd look at maybe Portland. I'd love a guy like Neil Olshey to come down, something like that.
Right, but are you getting Olshey?
No,
I don't think you're getting his assistant, which might be like Portland, and then Dallas were the teams that I had to get to. And Jason Collins is screaming at the top of his lungs. And even Dallas, I'm kind of like, the only reason why I thought about Dallas and said not bad is because Dallas every single offseason identifies the good veterans who are vastly underpaid for how they perform.
Yeah, that's very true.
And they go out and they bring all those guys in at reasonable contracts, and they surround Dirk Nowitzki, and they end up with a team that can make the playoffs. So they're at least good enough at identifying the veterans who are undervalued and bringing. So maybe Dallas Mavericks. But like, I'm halfway through the league, and I'm like not even super excited about these front offices. That's weird.
Yeah, it's not exciting, is it? Man, maybe the NBA is just terrible.
That's right. All GM, like GM's it's
bad.
Almost like every GM sucks. We just made fun of the Cleveland Cavaliers because LeBron is pulling
there
strings,
just running it for him, making their life easy.
Right. They won 57 games this season. Like they're a successful organization.
Yeah. Exactly. And we're not excited. So, maybe we just have the wrong idea here.
That's right.
I heard just like messed up.
We should just hire Sam Hinkie and let it go.
Sure. I mean, now I'm just so depressed. Like, let's bring in Hinkie. I'm happy.
All right. So I don't have anything else. You got anything else you want to talk about?
No, now I'm sad.
All right. So I'll leave you to go curl up in a ball and cry. We'll be back probably in about a week, maybe a little bit longer, to talk about draft stuff, because that's the next fun, exciting thing to talk about. Thanks for listening to the